And I wanted to use this opportunity both to kind of talk a little bit about Yom HaShoah and also talk use that as a springboard to talk a little bit about the beginning of the Zman. Over the past 10 years or so, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, I've had the opportunity, the privilege of being in Poland before Pesach 4 or 5 times. The past 2 years, unfortunately, we have not been able to go. But I want to bring a little bit of that experience, a little bit. I want to bring you, to the best that I can in the short, 20 minutes that I've allotted myself, to bring you to 3 places in Poland. And to give you a sense on Yom HaShoah of what, a little taste. Again, you can't duplicate being there at all. And if you have an opportunity, if you've been there, you're lucky in a certain sense. The profundity of the experience is tremendous. And if you haven't been there at some point, you should get there because it's a very powerful, any Holocaust class and shiur and lecture that you go to, it's not the same as being in these places and really seeing them firsthand. The 3 places I want to take you to are the Warsaw Cemetery. It's the first place. I want to take you to Auschwitz is the second place. And I want to take you to a certain place in Majdanek, which is the third place. My first time in Poland, our first stop was the Warsaw Cemetery. And we went at night, and it was eerie. The Warsaw Cemetery of in 1938, Warsaw was the third largest Jewish populated city in the world. And Warsaw had a history of about 800 years of Jewish presence in Warsaw. And the Jewish cemetery in Warsaw reflected hundreds upon hundreds of years of Jewish living in Poland and in Warsaw. And it's massive. It's absolutely enormous. It goes on and on and on. And if you have a vision of a horror film, I remember the first thing that struck me when I got to this massive, massive place, which is pretty much abandoned, which is, got trees and got ancient tombstones of all different types, none that is more recent, really, than 70 plus years. And falling apart, it's not the best kept, and you really feel like, I walked in these horror movies of being in a cemetery and some person coming out of a grave attacking you. That's the feeling that I had walking into the Warsaw Cemetery. And then you start to look at these tombstones, and you start to recognize all different kinds of people, some that you learn about. Gedolei Yisrael, people like Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, people like the Netziv, people like the Klei Chemda, people like the Mudzich Hasidus and all the Rebbes. All over the cemetery, you have Gedolei Yisrael. And you also have mass graves in that cemetery for people who perished during the time of the Holocaust. And then you have regular, ordinary people, secular Jews and actors and actresses and just regular Jews. And it's just goes on and on and on. And it highlights, in a certain sense, when you walk into the cemetery after that kind of horror film experience, then you have this sense of like, right now there are probably 200, 300 Jews living in Warsaw. And you see the cemetery and you see how rich life was in Poland, in that city, and you see that it's gone. There's nothing left. You see, you're exposed to the monumental nature of the destruction of European Jewry and Polish Jewry during that period of time. And one thing that struck me when I went a couple years ago, the head of our group read a poem. A poem you might have heard of. It's a beautiful poem. It's a powerful poem. It's a poem that I want to share with you. It'll be my first of 2 poems that I'm going to read to you, which I think is the message of the Shoah and the message of these trips and the message of today, to me, is not necessarily just wallowing in the depression of what happened to our people, but to give us a forward-looking mission for us. Because, yes, we are the survivors, and we are here, and we have a certain legacy and a certain responsibility that creates. And the poem is written by a woman named Linda Ellis. It has nothing to do with Judaism and has nothing to do with the Shoah. But I think it has everything to do with us. And again, one of the memories that I have of being in that Warsaw poem was this poem that I heard in that cemetery. And I want to share it with you. And it's something to think about every time you're in a cemetery, and perhaps every day of your lives. I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstones from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For the dash represents all the time they spent alive on earth. And only now, those who love them know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love, and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. And there are things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that still can be rearranged. To be less quick to anger and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they said about how you lived your dash? And I think the message, this is called the Dash poem, and the message is a very real one. It's not about, per se, the number that comes before the dash, the number that comes after the dash. The Ikar is how we live our dash. And to think a little bit today, and perhaps every day, about that dash, and something that, again, I heard this poem the first time in that cemetery, is something that, again, I think is appropriate and meaningful to think about. The second place I want to take you to is what is known as the worst place, is Auschwitz. And I'm sure you've seen a lot, you've heard a lot, you've learned a lot about the horrors. And any survivors, typically, from a concentration camp, from a death camp, came from Auschwitz, because all the other death camps were death camps. And when you go to places like Belzec or Sobibor or Treblinka, your life expectancy in those places was about an hour and a half. You were transported to be killed. Auschwitz was a death camp, but it was also a labor camp. So survivors, oftentimes they came from Auschwitz because that was the place where you didn't just only go to die. That's the place where there was a selection, etc. And I want to share with you someone you heard about after your Eilat Tiyul, when you stopped in Mitzpeh Yericho, Rav Sina Adler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who lived literally 60 meters from where I'm standing right now. And every year we had the schus, tremendous schus, of hearing from Rav Sinai speak to our yeshiva today. Last year he didn't because our yeshiva wasn't here. The year before he did, and he was weak and he was frail, but nevertheless, and perhaps even more so, equally inspiring. And Rav Sinai, a gadol batorah, tremendous, tremendous person who went through horrors, and all the drift off of his tongue and off of his life was Emunah B'Kadosh Baruch Hu. And hearing him speak about his Emunah, and hearing him express, despite everything he lived through, lost his parents, lost siblings, and was experienced all the horrors, and then came out and basically straight to Eretz Yisrael. And he's documented, he's written Sfarim on the topic. And then he went to yeshiva and dedicated his life to teaching Torah, became the Rav HaRashi of the city of Ashdod. And after 20-some years in that position, decided to retire, and decided to retire to Mevaseret Zion. And I remember my first Shabbos here. He invited me for lunch. And I went with him for lunch, and I was curious. Like, he wore a long frock, black hat, you know, he didn't look like Mevaser would be his place. And I remember we were sitting eating lunch together, and at some point I had the guts to ask him, like, why Mevaseret? Why do you decide to settle here? And he picked me up and he took me to his porch. And his porch, right over here, like literally two houses down, overlooking the view that you see every single day. The view of these hills, the views of Yerushalayim. And he basically says, like, what could be better than this? I sit on my porch, I'm learning Torah, yomam valayla, and this is where I am. Like, what could be better than this? And, like, I was struck. Like, yeah, what could be better than this? And that's why he ended up in Mevaseret. He's learning here, teaching Torah in the Kollel, a Rav in the community, and that's how he spent the last 30 years of his life. And inspiring people, yomam valayla. So I have one of his sfarim, and he was in Auschwitz. He grew up in Prague when the Nazis came to power and conquered then Czechoslovakia. He was taken to a concentration camp called Theresienstadt, and from there to Auschwitz. And yes, in the selection process, he was a youngster. He was 11, 12 years old at the time, 13. And his parents, he saw his parents being selected, Lamisa. And he was selected to live. And he has a story. And a story that I am, every time I tell this over, I am moved by it. I am profoundly impacted by it. And I want to read you the story. It's a story, he writes in Hebrew. I'm going to read it in Hebrew and then translate it as I go. But he writes, this book is called, again, and Holocaust survivor experienced all the tragedies. And it's called Le'olam Odecha. I will always thank you. And it's a story about Hakaras HaTov. And it charts his life, his path, and about his Hakaras HaTov. And then he says, I heard shiurim in Auschwitz. Things that I learned in Auschwitz. And one of the shiurim, he says, is called Shir Ad Yom Moso. The Shir Until the Day of Your Death. And he writes as follows. HaRambam Posek Behilchos Talmud Torah Ad Emosai Chai of Lilmo Torah Ad Yom Moso. From when? Up until when do you have to learn Torah? Until the day of your death. Kavanas haram hilu amdenu. Shekol zman shadam chai lanot shehu mudash hamirchak beino levin hamavasu kepesa chai vilmo Torah. As long as a person is alive, even if the distance between his life and his death is a step, he still has a chiv to learn. Ad yom oso. Eneni yodem haram heled al daato shitachen lilmo Torah b'matzav kafish musupar lahalan. Ulam hamaisa shahoya kachaya. I have no idea if the Rambam, when he wrote those words, intended to have the meaning of the story I'm about to tell you, but the story I'm about to tell you is 100% true. Kedei lekabel musag la mashut shel hashir hazeh, alai lesaper et hareka laoto shiur. To you to understand the shiur that I learned, I need to give you some background. Bioti b'machane ha-hashmada Auschwitz nitztavinu mipam lapam la'avor chitui neged kinim she-shartzu eleinu. Whenever we were when in Auschwitz, in the camp of destruction called Auschwitz, every so often we had to go through disinfectant to get rid of the lice that was on us. Chitui zeh na'asah mikiven sheribui shel kinim al adam asui legrom lehitpartzut machalat typhus shehi machala misukenet me'od machala shegermanim ba'atzmam pachadu mimena. The reason for the disinfection is because of typhus. And if we were not disinfected and the clothing was not disinfected, typhus was something that the Nazis feared and was a big concern. Hadovra nase bezauna shel hamachana. There was the showers, the real showers was called, they labeled them, they called them the sauna. I've seen this place. That's how they call the showers. It was not a sauna by any sense. Sheklal, and that's where they did gilua kol sarot haguf. They shaved the entire body down. Miklechet chama v'kei mirichat haguf b'chomer nozli ha-mashmir et ha-kinim beitzeim. They basically shave everyone down, every hair on their body, shower them off, and then throw some kind of disinfectant material on them to get rid of the lice, the body lice, and the eggs. V'gam ha-begatim nilkuchu l'chitui. And the clothing was also taken to these machines for disinfection. One night, when they took our clothing for disinfection, there was the machine that was disinfecting the clothing got damaged, was broken. Va'achrei sha'ot rabot shel hamtana nitzdavinu lachzor lemekomot halina shebmachaneh. After hours of waiting for our clothing to come back, waiting outside, we were told to go back to our barracks, lelo begadim, without clothing. Hayazeh b'choref, and this was in dead winter in Poland, when the temperature is well below 0 Celsius, well below zero, v'hashlagim mitzuyim, and there's snow all over the place. Poland gets very, very cold. Kisharak hana'alayim l'raglenu ratznu b'chutzot ha'machaneh l'vneh shebo hayom lanim. And just with shoes on our feet, that's it, nothing else, we ran back to our barracks without clothing, in dead winter. Our blankets were also taken for disinfection. That was a very disappointment. No clothing, no blankets, dead winter, and there was no heating whatsoever. You're in the dead winter. He said they had like thin like blankets. That's basically it. And that's it. And I'm sorry, they didn't even have thin blankets. And then he says, "Rak b'shamu cheret huvuas muchot." Late, they finally got the blankets, and then everyone went up to their barracks, to their bunks, and tried to get some sleep. B'li begadim kedei leheradim. We were very tired, he writes. It was a very hard day of work, and this was going on, and we were starving because we hadn't eaten in a long time either. As I got into my barracks to go to sleep, he says, "Ani shomea et kolo shel echad mishchenai." I heard the voice of one of my neighbors. Shekoreli, he's calling out to me. Umevakesh imeni shavo lishkav al yado im hasmicha sheli. He says to me, "Come, let's bunk together, and maybe it's very, very cold. I'm freezing cold, and maybe our body heats will help us survive the night, and we'll be able to keep each other warm." And I went into his bunk. As I was about to go to sleep, and as we were about to go to sleep, he says to me, "Amar li sheyesh li bakasha nosef." I have one more request. And he said, "Midei laila v'laila, b'terem hu sogeret einav, hu koveya itim latora." Every single night, before he closes his eyes to go to sleep, he's koveya itim latora. Lachem. He wants to be able to learn also now. And he asked if I could listen to his learning. And I didn't chap, says Rav Sinai. How can you possibly kovei itim haTorah in the middle of Auschwitz without clothing in the freezing cold? There's no svarim. How can you learn without svarim? There's no tnaim chitzoniyim. There's no environment of learning. How is it possible? And you're in the background, you had chimneys with smoke, and everyone knew what was happening below those chimneys. It was a constant threat. And this man, who herimet kolo, he started singing, b'mangina ha-mikubele shlomdim ba-gemara, in the classic nigin that you learn Gemara. And he started learning a paragraph, a daf, from Maseches Beitza. And I listened to his learning. And kimedumani, it seemed to me, shehu shachach legamre, shu shochev bekor az lelo begadim, va'atuf rak b'smicha daka. He totally forgot where he was. Without clothing, with a thin blanket, dead winter, in a death camp called Auschwitz. He also seemed to have forgotten what happened to his family, shekvar hafcha la'afar va'efer. That was already dust and dirt. And he seemed to forget the chimneys that were above him. Ba'oto sha'a hu yada rak davar echad. At that moment, he understood one and only one thing. Ani Yehudi. V'yeh ma sheyeh. Ani chayav l'chayem et ritzon koni, shenasan lanu toras chayim, Uba ani chayav lasok gam b'matzav kaze. He says this Gemara, yada hinu bal peh, ki kach lemdu b'yeshiva. In the yeshiva that he learned as a youth, he learned bal peh, so he knew this Gemara bal peh, lachem hu haya yachol lasok b'torah gam b'matzav kaze. And said Rav Sinai, But also sha'alamarati shakarish baruchu bara betochenu kochot adirim ka'elu. At this moment, I learned that Hashem gave us tremendous kochos. Shagam kasha anu niklaim lematzav nora shekazeh. Im nirtzeh, anu misugalim lafilam. Even in the worst of conditions, we can rise up. And this is the lesson he learned, pshat in the Rambam. Ad emosai chayv adam lilmot Torah, ad yom mosa. And this was a lesson that Rav Sinai taught over to his Talmidim, to our Talmidim, day in, day out, with just how he lived. Day in, day out, this is what he was. And something that, again, I will never forget this story from him, and many stories like it. His unwavering sense of emunah and vision and love of Talmud Torah and the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The last place I want to take you to is Majdanek. Majdanek is a concentration camp, also a death camp, right outside of Lublin. And again, the most striking thing when you go there is you have a modern city that is literally 200 meters away from this place of horror. And today it's a museum and a park, and there are people, Polish ladies, I remember, like wheeling their strollers through this death camp. And again, there's a lot to talk about. I'm not going to talk about it. I just want to talk about one place there. And the place there I want to talk about is what is known as the shoe room. And you walk in there, and there is a room. And you walk in, and right away, you smell dry old leather. And then you see these cases. Enormous room, big shoes and small shoes, heels and flats. A total of 430,000 pairs of shoes collected, real shoes, of Jews who were prisoners, who were killed in these death camps. And every shoe represented a human being. And you smell it, and you see it, and it's incredibly striking. In that shoe, I want to share with you, again, one more story, and then one more poem, and then we'll go back to Seder. The story I want to share with you is of a very simple survivor, a person of limited means, who survived the camps, I believe, ended up in Miami, and 20, 30 years after the war, made a dramatic Hachnasa Sefer Torah. It took him 20 years to pay off the sofer, small amounts every single year because he didn't have a lot of money, and after 20 some odd years, the Sefer Torah was ready. And it was a big event. And the Rav of the Shul didn't understand, like, it's a person of really limited means. Why was it so important? Why was it so significant that he do this Hachnasa Sefer Torah? What was it all about? And this Jew explained to this Rav in the following story. He said, when you were in these camps, probably the most important thing that you needed to have was a good pair of shoes. The difference between life and death was your shoes. We take shoes for granted. But again, in that cold, brutal winter, if you didn't have good shoes, decent shoes, when I say good shoes, I mean shoes that were just nominally protective, you wouldn't survive. You wouldn't survive. Good shoes were a big deal. And he had a good pair of boots. And one night, he fell asleep on his bunk in a deep sleep with his feet and shoes dangling over the side of the bed. And in the middle of the night, someone stole his boots. The next morning, roll call, and no boots, no shoes. And he needed something to put on his feet. And he found a tattered pair of shoes. Tattered, worn out, but that's all he had, that's all he could find. And that's what he put on. And upon investigating those shoes a little bit further, he noticed that the soles of the shoes were made from the cloth of an old Sefer Torah. He had to wear the shoes because that's all there was. Death otherwise. And every step he took, he understood that he was stepping on the klaf of a Sefer Torah. And it killed him that every step this was going on. And he made a commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if I ever get out, I'm going to go ahead and replace this Sefer Torah, no matter what it takes. Because the Sefer Torah ultimately saved his life, and that was the story of his shoes and the Sefer Torah. And I want to close with one last poem, and it's about shoes. It was written by a girl, Shira Hill, from London. And it relates to all of these shoes. She writes as follows. I am 6 million pairs of shoes. I will never walk again. I am gone. I am finished. I am dead. I will never see the sun rise over a clean winter morning or set over a warm July. I will never touch my husband, kiss my child, give comfort to a friend. I will never. I can never. You can. I have gone, but you are here, a living testimony. A living testimony to me. You will wear my shoes. You will walk my path. You will finish my journey, and then you will be 6 million pair of shoes. You will walk because you are here. You will walk because you have to. You will continue what I have started. Raise my child, live my dream. I am 6 million pair of shoes. I am 6 million pair of shoes. What are you? I'm a pair of shoes. I am hope and dream and aspiration. I am the child you could not raise. I am the dream you could not dream. I am the life you could not lead. I am the path you could not follow. I lie. I am not now, not yet. But one day I will be. I will live for your hope, your dream, your aspiration. I will raise your child. I will dream your dream. I will lead your life. I will follow your path. I will wear your shoes. I will wear 6 million pair of shoes. I will wear 6 million pairs of shoes. I promise. I think if there's a message of today, and if there's a message that we can take with us, it's not to just wallow in avelos of the past. It's to be mission-driven. It's to understand that, yes, our people were decimated, and Baruch Hashem, we weren't. We were knocked out, but not knocked out for the count. And we continue, and we push forward, and we grow, and we fill very, very large shoes. And I think the goal for the next 7.5 weeks, and for the summer, and for next year, and Be'ez Hashem, for the next May of Be'ezer, is to go ahead and fill that dash, and make sure that our dash is being maximized, that we're doing everything we can to be our best, to contribute to our brothers, to our sisters, to our chaverim, to our mishpachos, to ourselves, and really maximize everything that we do. I want to wish everyone a exceptionally productive zman, a beautiful zman of growth, of limud Torah, and we should not have the nisyonos that our grandparents have. We should live a life that is much easier nisyonos, but we should meet the challenges just as many of our forebears did as well.